Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Dan. Happy Tuesday. It's nice to see you sitting in the seat. We miss Hank, but it's nice having another friendly face.
Hank's on a technical assignment in San Ardo.
That's good. He's keeping us on the air, which is important.
Yeah.
So what's on my mind today is a bit of this dichotomy that I'm feeling given just kind of the craziness of everything that's happening. Just, let's say, out in the world and then politically and then socially, but then right here at home in our own backyard, we're in the midst of kind of our holiday frenzy. I'm sure you're feeling it too. We're supposed to be buying and wrapping and baking and being busy with parties, you know, all of that seasonal flair, decorating. Our weather is unseasonably warm, so it's hard to feel that festive feeling around the holidays, but we're in it and we're supposed to be out shopping and spending our money locally. But at the same time, in our backyard is the second largest, maybe the largest fire in California history is still burning. And this has displaced, you know, thousands and thousands of people who have been out of their homes for multiple weeks. The firefighters who have been away from their families going on 21 days. We got a text from one of our friends, Neil Moriarty. He's been down at the fire for 21 days, and we were checking in. He said, I'm hoping that I'm off of here by Christmas. And so I was thinking about his family and his children and how his life has been kind of disrupted, and he's dedicated to his work, battling the flames. Our next-door neighbor's son is also a firefighter. Charlie Watkins is out there. He's this young, handsome young man at 20 years old, feeling committed to protecting and serving. And I know his mom is worried every day, and we're all thinking about him.
So it's a very different kind of holiday season for them.
Yes. And by virtue of being a part of this community, it feels different for me. I'm assuming that it's feeling different for a lot of people because it's hard to settle in and really feel festive when you know so many people you care about are struggling. And just like right here at home. And then what will be the fallout long term? And they talk about these fires, this fire just being part of that new normal. And so what that looks like. And it seems like 2017 has been about accepting a lot of new normals. Or maybe not accepting that it's a new normal, but realizing that what we thought was normal politically, socially, economically is shifting. And so I'm thinking about that. Like I'm feeling kind of this pull because part of me is very excited. I have a 2-year-old granddaughter. I'm excited about, you know, experiencing the holidays through her eyes. My daughter's home from college. Friends' kids are home from college that I haven't seen for months and months. You know, there's the joy in that, celebrating my mom's birthday and getting together with my sister and her children. I'm very excited about that. But then there's a lot of work that goes into preparing for that holiday because we don't just all show up. Maybe some people just show up. But for those of us who are kind of pulling the holiday together, there is the buying and the wrapping and the baking and getting the Christmas card together. Those are joyous stresses. That's the way I try to look at them, that it is stressful because they're responsibilities and things that I need to get done so that the holiday is pulled off without a hitch, that it looks seamless, that everyone arrives and it all looks like, you know, elves came in and created it, but there are the people doing the work. So it's happy stress. But when you start to have a lot of stresses that build up, whether they're happy stresses putting together a family event or overwhelming stresses dealing with fire and natural disasters or, you know, political struggles or whatever that is, you know, interpersonal struggles, those stresses, when they pile up, you can reach a level of overwhelm that's hard to deal with. It's hard to adapt to. You know, we only have so much capacity for stress in our human psyche. And then we start to break down. We start to not sleep well. We start to feel anxious or depressed. We maybe sleep more or less. We can start to feel out of sorts. All those kind of indications that we've hit our limit. So I was thinking about how we talk about in the trades, in the therapy trades, the term self-care. And being a therapist, one of the things I've always prided myself on is being a professional self-care artist, that it goes along with my job, that I always am kind of making sure I take time to get some exercise, get good sleep, eat well. Because if I'm not caring for myself, I can't care for my students or my clients or my family. But I feel depleted. And I had this kind of awakening in the last couple of weeks that I hadn't really been doing a good job with my self-care, and it surprised me. And it came in the form of a random text from Carol Dawn, who said, "Hey, how about coming in for a massage?" And I went, "Oh, that would be a fun thing to do. I haven't done that in quite a long time." And I was so glad that she kind of reminded me and invited me in. And I went and had that foot reflexology, and I started to feel a little better. I thought, "Ooh, there's some more nice things I can do." And then my girlfriend called and said, "Are we going to do our walk on the bike path? Are we going to walk out to the beach and have a conversation?" I said, "Oh, yeah, we definitely need to do that." And so yesterday I ended up taking a long walk with my friend Michelle. And on the walk, we started having this conversation about self-care. She's also a helping professional and prides herself on being a self-care artist. And so we were talking about what self-care looks like. And we realized that throwing out the term self-care is so blanket and broad that maybe a lot of people don't understand what that self-care, good self-care, actually looks like. Like, there are things that we may be doing that we think is helping us to replenish our reserves, but maybe sometimes that self-care we're participating in actually drains us or is harder on us than it should be. It's almost like we attack self-care the way we attack life, and it ends up becoming more burdensome. Like, when I say self-care, what comes to mind?
For me, taking time to be at peace, be quiet, taking time to do yoga, taking time to read. You know, in my case, a lot of times it means taking the dogs for a walk. You know, that's utilitarian, but kind of tune into the mental space of where the dogs want to be. So all of those things to me mean taking care of myself.
Do you ever have trouble making time to do that?
Who doesn't?
Okay.
You know, everybody does, especially this time of year. There's so much going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and again, I go back to the idea, because at this time of year, the holiday season, there's so much going on that we're supposed to be happy doing. It's fun to buy gifts. It's fun to give to others. It's fun to spend time with them. But I don't think we recognize all that we do to get to that place of being with others. So that's what I thought. That's what I thought would be a good topic of conversation today. I invited my friend Michelle to come in the studio to continue our conversation that we started yesterday, and to open up the phone lines today and ask people, you know, what is your self-care routine? Do you make time for it? A lot of us can list off the things we do for self-care, but the other question is, and do you ever do them? Do you really make time? And how much time do you need to do that? And then to talk a bit about the stress that people are feeling right now, that kind of dichotomy of, can we be festive and joyful and gather with families and still worry about our neighbors and our communities to the south that are struggling right now, still displaced, not knowing where the fire is going to go, and our neighbors to the north who are rebuilding and grappling with all the loss in Santa Rosa from the fires. I mean, it's just, there's a lot of hurt and pain and heartache, as always. And so how are you finding ways to be joyful? And also just to kind of open the phone lines and see where people are these few days before we go off on holiday break. So you'll be invited to be a part of the conversation soon at 805-781-3875. You can also find us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You can like our page and get updates. You can always send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com or check out our website, thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org under the News Talk tab, and they're updated quickly, so you can catch all of our shows going back the last 5 years if you want to spend some time binging on Reluctant Therapist podcasts. And then you can get new shows uploaded to your device by visiting Apple Podcasts or NPR One and searching A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and subscribe, and the shows will be uploaded every week. So we're happy that you're here. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You're listening to Public Radio KCBX, and we'll be back to start this conversation and to take your calls.
Home for the holidays, I believe I've missed each and every face. Come on and play uneasy. Let's turn on every love light in the place. It's time I found myself totally surrounded in your circles. Oh, oh my friends. Please celebrate me home. Give me a number. Please celebrate me home. Play me one more song.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And my guest in the studio today is my friend Michelle Gordon.
Hi.
Hi. It's nice to have you here.
Thanks for bringing me in.
I think it was a little dragging. I don't know if it was bringing necessarily. A little bit. We need to continue this conversation. But Michelle is also a lecturer at Cal Poly. She's a parent educator. She has a master's in education. So she brings a wide variety of expertise in self-care and helping families to cope and deal with difficult situations and stressful times. And so aside from just being a great companion to walk with and have conversations with, you bring an expertise that I think a lot of people appreciate in how they navigate through difficult times with their family. And so let's pick up a little bit with where we left off yesterday about this idea of self-care, because we had both, well, you said I'm an expert at self-care, and then I felt a little competitive because, like, no, I'm generally consider myself an expert at self-care, and I realized that I was failing and you were still excelling. So when you talk about self-care, how do you define that for yourself?
A great question. And I think when I think about my own definition for self-care, it's really changed over my life, how I practice self-care, think about self-care, has moved from much more intense practice to much more reflective practice. I think early on, in my 20s, I certainly thought about self-care being synonymous with exercise, mm-hmm. Often in terms of what I ate, and sometimes I could be quite rigid about that. And so I fell short a lot in how I, you know, it was sort of, did I achieve self-care?
Right,
did
as if it was one more thing right. You had to attain for success.
Right.
Yeah. And the pressure of self-care.
And I think that was my epiphany in that I was setting the stage for this sort of success or failure idea of self-care. And it was the exact opposite that needed to occur. It was really self-nurture. Mm-hmm. And what did that look like? And not only did that change from 20 to now in my 50s, it certainly changes from day to day. And I try to ask myself, what do I need to feel better? What do I need to feel more grounded or less weepy or, you know, mm-hmm. I think it's much, I'm much more reflective about it, and I think I'm much more flexible about its definition.
So just generically, mm-hmm. what would you say are your go-to self-care habits right now?
My go-to self-care habits, I think nature.
Okay.
I've noticed over the years how much nature it fuels me. And so a trail run on our, you know, we have amazing hills around here. So a trail run or yoga has been something that's been new to me. I just started yoga 2 years ago, partly just to restore from years of running. But I've learned a lot in terms of self-care from yoga that, I need to slow down a little bit in how I practice self-care and sort of be gentler with myself, I think.
Yeah, and it is. I like the term that you use, self-nurturing, because there is, when I was thinking about all the things that we do in our lives to maintain our mental health and well-being, because that's kind of our goal, is to sustain good mental health so that we in turn can be there for others. Both of us are teachers, both of us are moms, you know, both of us work with clients. We have a lot of people that look to us for support. And so inherent in our professions is this requirement that we care for our mental health, right? As I mentioned, getting good sleep and eating well and getting some exercise. And as we were talking yesterday, I was thinking about, you know, that almost is self-maintenance more than self-care. Like after our conversation, I started to really divide out that my self-maintenance is kind of the regimen that we do for stress reduction, which is eating small meals each day, high in proteins and carbohydrates and fruits and vegetables, drinking plenty of water, getting the right amount of sleep, getting a healthy amount of exercise. And I make sure I say a healthy amount of exercise because we can exercise too much as well as we can exercise too little. Writing down, journaling those things that are feeling stressful for us and taking some time to take a few easy breaths every day. Like that would be self-maintenance. Those are the basic things we need to do every day or as much as we can each day to maintain our mental health and well-being and our physical health. And that also keeps our stress manageable because stress really is never non-existent. I mean, we have to have some stress in our life or we would just lay around and watch Netflix all day. We would have no motivation to get anything done. So some stress is healthy. So these things of eating, exercising, sleep, writing things down, breathing are all inherent in just maintaining our mental health and keeping stress manageable. But I think there's a whole other category, and this is the one that we don't really discuss, and that's the self-nurturing category. That part of, as Dan was talking about, being reflective, meditating, being quiet. You talk about being in nature, having time where we just kind of check out and slow down. And that self-nurturing replenishes our psyche and our nervous system and brings about this sense of peace. Then I think that is the part that's most difficult to make time for because it feels selfish. I'm trying to think of the reasons why I would be less apt to take that time to go get a facial or to get a massage or to go on a retreat. You and I have talked about going on a retreat together just to remove ourselves from the day-to-day. The self-nurturing seems like a more challenging piece of our lives.
And I think I like how you distinguish between sort of the maintenance aspect. And I do think of myself as sort of fiercely protective of my wellness. Mm-hmm. But that's really maintenance. Mm-hmm. And so then how is, as you were sharing, I was thinking, okay, so for me, how is self-care, self-nurture different? And I think there's a pleasure element to it. And that's what I've discovered over the years. My self-care in my 20s wasn't always pleasurable.
No.
Hill repeats are not pleasurable. And so now that is always a part of it. And so perhaps it's something about that pleasure that becomes problematic.
Right.
It feels like a luxury.
Yes. Or that we feel embarrassed. Like, oh, who am I to take pleasure for myself? And there's something almost noble in the self-maintenance, right? Well, I ran 4 miles or, I ate 14 beans and a handful of almonds today. Like those things that we consider healthcare as good diet, that's actually almost a self a beating up of ourselves to maintain this quality of life. It's like, I'm going to be so healthy. I'm going to rigidly stay in this. And ultimately, that's not really self-care. It really is maintenance. As you said, you and I were talking yesterday about how we sometimes confuse exercise with a rigid, demeaning experience, right? That if we're not pushing ourselves in our exercise to get to the next level, to achieve our greatest ability, that we're somehow failing at exercise. And then ultimately exercise stops being self-care because you feel beat up or embarrassed. I mean, you have to tell the yoga story. because that was very telling in this idea that when we talk about exercise, everyone says, well, I take time out for myself. I exercise. But are you taking time out and exercising and it nourishes you in this kind of self-loving way? Or is it because now you've beaten your body into submission and you can eat that, donut hole that you are saving out for? It becomes almost this reward and punishment and not a nurturing.
Right. So the yoga story.
Okay.
So I was in the Bay Area over the holidays last year and had gone to a yoga studio up there. That when I'm visiting relatives, I often go to this yoga studio. And so the instructor knows me. And there was a particular yoga position that's quite challenging. And it involves sort of an arm balance. And, you know, I've sort of been moving with self-nurture to that I don't always have to challenge myself. I don't have to go to the same level, sometimes the next level. Sometimes just staying put and feeling safe is the best thing I can do for myself. So on this particular day, I was in much more of a restorative mode. And so when I was challenged to do this arm balance by the instructor to the sort of directive to the class, I probably moved into sort of stretching or something
some
like
child's
that.
Pose.
Child's pose. <Yes. laughs> And so the instructor from across the room in a very un-yoga-like fashion sort of shamed me with, why aren't you doing the arm balance like the rest of the class? And my immediate response without thinking was, I'm old, which sort of, when Elizabeth and I were walking, took us on another tangent of just, to me, I've come to the place where I'm old means I'm going to take care of what I need to do, when I need to do it. And what I need to do right now is just stretch and not challenge myself. And so, but the yoga instructor sort of gave me a lesson in how we can continue to challenge ourselves even in our elderly, you know, sort of years, but well, not quite the takeaway.
But that was the two things I loved about the story. It was one, that you got a little shamed in a place where you were supposed to be self-nurturing and you ended up feeling poorly. Not totally poorly, because you said, when asked, why aren't you doing it? Said, because I'm old. That's a whole other piece, because we do change. Our body does change, and mm-hmm. the things that feel good and nurture us change, where maybe, you know, running a tough mudder or it's a mud race when you're in your 20s would feel like self-care because you feel like you've triumphed. But you and I both realize we've gotten to an age where it's nice to say, I'm old and I don't need to do that anymore. And the old feels good because I now trust my body and I'm not trying to beat it into submission. And although I can say that and it feels really good, I notice I'm not fully there all the time. There are parts of me on a regular basis that think I need to beat myself into submission, right, to be my best and challenge myself. But you've given me a new language of, but I love myself enough to enjoy being this age and being old. And wouldn't it be great to own the whole idea of being old as the wisdom that it represents? If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest is Michelle Gordon. And we're kind of dancing around the topic of self-care, which we've renamed self-nurturing, and what that looks like. And do you find or feel that there's a difference between self-care and self-nurture? And why is it okay to talk about that self-care plan, that regimen we have of maintaining our wellness, but we don't feel as comfortable talking about self-nurturing and pleasure and anything that is pleasure filled, that we almost feel guilty talking about that? And we'll say, I have guilty pleasures of, you know, television shows that I don't want to admit that I watch, right? So we can have a guilty pleasure, but a pure pleasure is difficult to talk about, because maybe it feels selfish, or that, you know, who do we think we are to grab pleasure when other people are struggling or suffering? And maybe exactly what we need is for all of us to find a way of pleasuring ourselves in our lives in a way that's healthy and definitely replenishing. Because I think my concern with the whole idea of self-care is that it's lost its replenishment capabilities, that we may be participating in yoga and exercise and meditation and eating well and being healthy in ways that we think are replenishing us in self-care, but they really are becoming something that we feel guilty if we don't accomplish, right? It starts to become a way that we beat ourselves up. Oh, I didn't stay with my program this week, or I wasn't meditating as often as we could. You know, like we start beating ourselves up for not doing these things that are supposed to make us feel good. And then we end up feeling badly. And then we get depleted and it's hard to come back. So I guess I want to throw it out there to you. Like, what do you think about these ideas? Do you self-care? Do you self-nurture? How do you feel about pleasure? And how are you feeling right now in this kind of season of joyful gathering? Are you feeling either self-cared or pleasure? 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation. 805-781-3875. And also at this time of year and what's going on in the world and with the fires and people being displaced and families feeling unsure of what's going to be happening next in their lives, we're happy to talk about how to talk with your kids and gather with your family and to kind of find time to care for each other when things feel out of control. So you can call in with a question as well. 805-781-3875. So it's interesting because I'm thinking about this idea of things that are pleasurable and why we feel guilty about them. And then the thing that my brain keeps going to is all the things that people would say are pleasurable, a glass of wine, right? A hot bath, being with friends, time in nature, all of those things that are pleasurable. And do we ever, what are the ones that make us feel guilty? Spending time intimately with our partners, that pleasurable time. Do we take the time for pleasure even with our partners? Because it's interesting that research shows, and this is maybe going way off topic, but when I hear pleasure, I think of our sexuality and our relationships, and that couples are spending half as much time intimately with each other as they did 20 years ago, that their sexual connection and intimacy time is like over in half the time than it was 20, 30 years ago, and that couples are feeling a little more disconnected even when they're doing pleasurable things. I don't know if you have any thought.
I always feel guilty when I'm doing self-nurture of pleasure because my husband is he's a teacher and he's so busy that he doesn't have time during the day to go on a hike or to even sometimes breathe, it seems like.
Right, or read a magazine.
And I know he's only kidding when, he'll say, "What'd you do today?" And I was like, "Oh, I went on a hike this morning. I got a hike in before I was teaching." And he'll say, "Oh, it must be nice," or, "What a life you have." And so I think, I know he's absolutely kidding. However, I mean, it can really trigger me in terms of it almost feels self-indulgent.
Right.
Or perhaps, I'm not achieving at the level I should because I should be busier. Should I create more things to make me busy so I don't have time to hike?
Right. It's almost as if you've got time to take a bath or have a glass of wine or have sex with your spouse for more than 2 minutes, you're clearly not achieving what you should.
Right. I must not be important.
Interesting. 805-781-3875. Hi, Mary. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hello. My concern is, I feel all the things that you're talking about. I totally can relate to them. I feel a lot of stress this time of year. But what I'm dealing with, besides all the normal stresses, is that I'm unemployed right now. So some of your suggestions about ways to self-nurture, such as getting a facial or getting a massage or going to a yoga class, are out of my reach. So I would like you to speak to those of us that can't afford to do those things this time of year, can't afford to participate in self-nurturing of that kind. What can we do to get ourselves feeling better and make it through this stressful time of year?
Mary, thank you for calling in and reminding me of that, because there are a lot of ways to self-nurture that shouldn't cost anything. And one of the simple ways is that you can do a home spa with just lavender and coconut oil and Epsom salts in your bath, things that aren't cost prohibitive, but you can even go online, and I've looked up in the past different ways to do a home facial, just using some oatmeal and honey and making a paste and kind of creating in your own home with music and maybe a candle and dimming the lights and pulling out a cozy robe and boiling some water to put your feet in, just bringing those elements of a spa into your home and putting aside the time to really give yourself an hour, 2 hours to soak your feet and maybe put some polish on your toes or put a facial mask on, put a deep conditioner of mayonnaise in your hair and avocado,
right.
Which remember, but to create your own home spa experience with your own music. And I think the key is, even though you're out of work and maybe feeling like maybe I should spend every second looking for work or I should be spending every second, right, being more productive, that it's equally as important for you to say, I deserve an hour and a half to just bring this to myself.
Right. I so often feel like that, as you were speaking before, I feel like I'm the one in the family that is supposed to bring it all together. So I feel that added stress that mm-hmm. I'm the one that's supposed to make the magic happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that especially this year, it's extra hard for me. Even like you were saying, with all the other things going around us with the fires and the political scene and all that, it's just extra stressful this year. I mean, in fact, I've not even decorated my house. Mm-hmm. I've not put up a tree. I've not done anything. And one of the things that I do, I notice, is I'm sleeping more, which is an escape. I know I'm escaping by doing that. So it's really great to be able to listen to you. And I will go on your website. But I just wanted to say, you know, there are some of us out here that are struggling, and it's great to have this outlet to speak to it.
I'm glad you called in, and I appreciate the feeling of being the person who has to magically pull it all together. We are the Christmas elves. And I'm just curious, Mary, it's like, what is one thing that you are actually looking forward to? There must be one small thing that you're looking forward to over the holidays.
Well, Christmas Eve, my entire family is getting together. We'll be at my son's house. And I am looking forward to that because, as a tradition over the years, I do read the night before Christmas. So I'll be doing that. I look forward to doing that for my grandchildren. And just the idea of being together.
Mm-hmm.
This year, I won't be able to give as many gifts. I've already resigned myself to that, you know, there won't be as many gifts. But I keep telling myself that it's not important what's under the tree. It's who's around the tree that's the important thing. So I do keep that thought in mind and look forward to being with them on Christmas Eve.
Well, and if you have one thing that you can be looking forward to, as you are with reading the night before Christmas, sometimes that helps to, if we just focus on the things that we do look forward to, it helps us kind of let go a bit of the ways we feel like we're not measuring up. Because again, in our culture, we're always focused on the ways we're not living up to the expectations. And it's very difficult for us to celebrate or acknowledge the ways that we are doing well. And your grandchildren hearing you read that story is something that's going to last in their lifetime much longer than any gift you could ever give them. And so,
that's right.
You know, and so that is the most important thing you do every year, is you give of yourself to your grandchildren, and they have this memory that they're holding, that they'll take the rest of their lives. And so I hope that although there are a lot of stressful things happening, that you'll really be able to sink into and love your moment reading to the kids this year, and to let them know. And as a gift, if you'd like to have an extra story at any time throughout the year, I am happy to have you sit on my lap and read to you, and that will be my special grandma gift.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, you have brought a smile to my face, I must admit. Thank you so much.
I'm happy I did, Mary. Mary, happy holidays to you. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you're listening to Public Radio KCBX. We're talking about what to do during these stressful times, how we can self-care, what is the difference between self-care and self-nurture. And we'll be back to continue our conversation. And Molly, hang in there. We'll get to you first.
An easy highway, traveling where the western winds can fly. Somebody tried to tell me, but the man forgot to tell me why. I gotta count on being gone. Come on, mama. Come on, daddy. Be what you want from me. I'm this strong. I'll be
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. My guest today is Michelle Gordon. Thanks for coming in today, Michelle.
Thank you.
It's always much more fun with two, especially when it's your girlfriend coming in. And that's my holiday gift to myself, is having my friend sit in the studio with me, because she makes me smile. And it's funny, those simple pleasures in life. But making a new friend when you're in your 50s is really a wonderful surprise, isn't it? Like, you get to a certain point where you think, I've made all my friends and this is my life and these are my people. And then you meet someone. I mean, friends, this is our third year.
I think so.
Oh, going on French. but it's your friendship with me has been a welcome surprise in my older age. So thank you for that.
Thank you. And a friendship not connected to our children.
Yeah, that's what's interesting, right? Because most of the friendships when you're younger are where your kids hang out. And we made our own friendship without our kids having to intervene. So go us. 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation. How are you dealing with your life at large right now? How are things going? Are you self-care? Are you able to self-care? Are you able to self-nurture? Are you just feeling overwhelmed? Molly, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. I've been doing body work for a very long time. And I'm a really old lady. And
and embrace that.
And a couple things I really find useful that I've learned from my teachers. And one was, as a body worker, to when an appointment is over, to wash several times from my elbows down and kind of shake off whatever I've accumulated, because my teacher was saying that you accumulate energy. If it gets past your elbows, you can start to absorb it more readily. And so just you know, freshening the touch as well. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing was that I use all the time. It's a Jinshin Jitsu, I'm not sure which it's called. But there is they talk about the fingers carrying, accumulating unexpressed emotions. Mm-hmm. And so their technique is they'll hold very gently but not softly. And that's not a tight squeeze. But with the opposite hand, holding one finger at a time. I usually go back and forth, thumbs, first fingers, and so on, for about 2 or 3 minutes. Or if you need longer, you can take as long as you want. But what basically happens as you hold, say, if I'm holding my thumb, it gradually, the pulses settle, and my whole system starts to settle. And I have a hunch that we're getting at the limbic. Mm. And so the thumbs discharge worry or carry worry, and then the first finger is fear, the middle finger is anger, the ring finger is sorrow, and the baby finger is trying too hard or efforting, that tightness that we can get up in the shoulders that come up from the arm.
Are you squeezing the finger
just
with your opposite hand?
Just enough that it feels held. Okay. Not enough that you're squishing it.
So isn't that typical?
It's not slack.
Yes.
And I'll do it in the night when I'm sleepless, and it really settles me into my body and out of my chitch, out of my head, you know, my mind's kind of going in circles. And I know it sounds really basic, but I find it a really helpful, portable tool.
But it's funny how we think, you know, that in order to care for ourselves, it needs to be complex or overwhelming. But
yeah,
it's really the simple things that we do that help us to feel the best. It doesn't have to be complex. But I thought it was interesting, Molly, that when you said grab your fingers with the opposite hand, Michelle and I both started to, and I was squeezing my fingers so hard, I figured, well, the harder I squeeze it,
No, this is part of it.
No, but that went exactly with what we were talking about today, is that we tend to think that if we do it harder or faster or stronger, that it's somehow better. And really, it's the nurturing holding, just holding it.
And also I learned washing, like showering at the end of a work day, to make sure to wash at the top of the spine, the base of the neck, and just let the water kind of wash over, because that's a place we accumulate a lot of tension as well. And the other thing, I don't have family around. This is a time of year when I just sleep and I'm in bed. When it's dark, I just relish the dark, because it's the rest. It's the time of year that allows me to rest, so that the rest I can take it off into the next part of the year with more self-nurturing.
Well, and I think, you know, Mary had mentioned that she was sleeping more than usual as an escape. And mm-hmm. I forgot to say, which I'm glad she brought up, that I love putting on my pajamas at 4:30 in the afternoon mm-hmm. this time of year mm-hmm. and getting more sleep. And there mm-hmm. is something about that hibernation and mm-hmm. and all of this message in our culture that you need to be busy, busy, mm-hmm. busy and going, 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 that we somehow almost overlook our mm-hmm. natural sense of wanting to slow down when it gets dark and hunker down, that we think we have to keep going. So thank you for the reminder that sleep at this time of year is...
Well, sleep is an enormously... There's a whole book that's been done about it, about all different... research into all kinds of different pathologies. And it's... sleep is a component that undermines the health, whatever the issue is. Mm-hmm. And they find it in all, you know, with research in all directions. So eye shades and staying away from, have lots of little lights in your room if you can do it.
And start the sleep ritual early so that by the time you're ready to go to bed, your body's ready.
And you'll come and go. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll wake for some time, but you have a nice long night and it's just yummy.
I love that. My sleep will be yummy tonight, Molly. Thank you for calling in with the suggestions. Have a happy holiday. All right, so Michelle.
So as Molly was sharing, and you and I were squeezing our hands.
Instead of just nurturing our fingers, I noticed immediately that I was too harsh on my poor finger.
And I was thinking about the shower. You mentioned the sleep ritual. I'm reminded that I often talk with the families that I work with about rituals. And I think there's something very safe and calming about rituals. And I think we can decide to introduce those or choose to introduce those into our life. Maybe a shower at the end of a day or... I often do one of those body scans when I'm in bed. So I'll, you know, lie on my back and I'll start with my feet and I'll say, relax your toes. And also I have that ritual of doing that before I go to sleep. Or Molly shared the hand exercise. That could be a ritual. Or how we put on our pajamas. I know often when I come home from work, that is very symbolic of going from sort of the outside stressful mm-hmm. world to my safe haven. And I'll put my pajamas on to sort of mark that transition. And that's a ritual for me. So I think looking at what kind of daily rituals do we have that calm, soothe, connect
nurture.
Us with ourselves,
mm-hmm.
nurture, and bring pleasure.
Right.
Maybe a glass of wine, you know, a small glass of wine in the pajamas.
Yes.
Before the bath, after the bath.
And
all
having,
without cost.
Exactly. And having something that you look forward to sliding into. Mm-hmm. You know, there's something almost decadent about a cozy, you know, pair of whatever it is, sweats or pajamas. My daughter puts on this oversized T-shirt and we tease her about it, but that is calming to her. She puts that on and she feels safe. And so when we talk about self-nurturing and the pleasure, that it doesn't have to be outrageous pleasures where you're taking a cruise to Alaska or, you know, it is, like you said, those daily rituals of pleasure. And when we work with families, you reminded me that that's one of the first things we teach our children as babies, is that ritual, that nighttime ritual of eating, taking a bath, getting in jammies, reading a book, going to bed. You know, that's simple. And if you're not doing that with your children, it's a great way to help them start to learn how to self-nurture, is to have this evening routine of dinner, bath, nighty, book, and then drifting off to bed. And that, and also putting them to bed earlier than you think you should be. That children are ready for bed at 7:30, and to start that ritual evening sleep routine at 5:36. It might be challenging when you're working, but as close as you can. Because if you can model or teach your children to have these self-soothing rituals when they're a baby through adolescence, they'll be able to tap into that themselves. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest today is Michelle Gordon. We're talking about the differences between self-care and self-nurture. We're talking about dealing with stressful periods of time. We are in a stressful period of time, a happy stress when it comes to holidays and decorating and buying and wrapping and gathering together and talking about stresses that are external, the fires that are raging south of us, what's happening politically, what might be happening interpersonal in your lives or with work or in the economy. We have stress that is good stress that we take on because we want to nurture our families. We have stress that comes to us that we're not ready for. And so how do we live with that stress and find ways to also care for ourselves? 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation. We're always looking for other ways to self-care, to self-nurture. We'd love to hear how you do that for yourself. And if you aren't finding time to self-nurture, which is different, we've come up with our own new definition, difference between self-care and self-nurturing. Self-care is the maintenance that we do for our wellness, that maintenance that we do, that basic maintenance that we do to take care of our mental health, which includes exercise, eating well, drinking water, getting enough sleep, journaling, taking easy breaths each day. That we've discerned is our basic maintenance to care for ourselves in a way that will maintain our physical and mental health. But what we wonder is how many people are really doing the self-nurture piece, taking the time to put your feet up on a pillow at the end of the day and just take a few nice breaths with the lights out, or to listen to music that you enjoy, or to read a book, or to have a conversation with a friend. You know, one of the things I valued most about my friendships here is that my girlfriends remind me, and I remind them, that we need to make time to get together, that our lives could be busy all the time. We could fill every single day with things to do, but to carve out that time to just go for a walk or to talk and to share our stories, that is replenishing, and it feels, it's pleasurable and it's nourishing, and it needs to be done without guilt. So are you finding ways for pleasure in your life without guilt that really are replenishing you in times that can be very stressful? 805-781-3875. So is everyone capable? I mean, we like to think that everyone's capable of just carving out time or finding ways to get through stressful times. I mean, do we all have that capacity? Or do you think certain people have more capacity for resilience or strength than other people? Like, you know, do you think we need to develop kind of this inner strength to carve out time for ourselves?
Or just carving out time for ourselves and engaging in self-nurture. And I think self-nurture also is even self-talk. Positive mm-hmm. self-talk is self-nurture. I think that's how we gain strength. And I know, again, with my families, I talk so much about resilience. I talk about resilience with our college students who are struggling with anxiety and depression. And, you know, what is resilience? The ability to deal with adversity, to deal with uncertainty, to bounce back, you know, sort of navigate difficult times. And I think that comes from, you know, as we're talking, I'm thinking that comes from self-nurture.
Yeah.
The
believing that you're worth
right.
taking the time right. to care for yourself, right? Because I think you're right. When it comes to self-talk, there's a lot of self-incrimination and beating up that we do. And why aren't you hitting that pose in yoga? And why aren't you achieving this? And so that self-talk is depleting. And I think it undermines resilience, that it almost takes more courage to speak kindly of yourself and to care for yourself. And that actually then teaches us that we're of value and develops resilience.
And I think we're in all different places in terms of self-nurture. Mm-hmm. I think we need to consider it a skill. And like any other skill, we have to work on it. We have to give effort to it. And I think it's a fake it till you make it. You know, my self-talk can be really self-defeating. Mm-hmm. And I have to choose to say kind things to myself. And to choose to change the messages that, you know, race through my head. So I think it's something that we have to invest in, that self-nurture, and then in turn we gain resilience and strength.
I think also that there is this challenge when you're at all ambitious, you know, want to do well. We look at our life and, you know, the older we get, the less time we have forward ahead of us. And so I feel that sometimes that sense of my ambition to want to be the best person I can or to achieve certain things. But then that other part of me, as you were talking about, like the enjoying aging and growing older and saying, you know, I might not ever do a handstand again, right? I might not run a triathlon, or, and to really honor that and say, and that feels okay. And to be able to let go maybe how we identified or defined our success or who we were, and to let it change as we age and grow. And that there is some huge resilience that develops in that when you see that your value is no longer how many sit-ups you can do, but if you can read The Night Before Christmas with love and care to your grandchildren, and to have that self-talk be, look at this gift I gave my grandchildren. I'm doing my part as a grandparent that's going to impact my grandchildren's lives. I feel good about that. And in that moment, like all of those neurons in your nervous system just are on fire. And I also, you know, and it's not uncommon. I mean, it's much easier to love and give praise to others that we care deeply about than it is to love and give praise to ourselves. I think there's a bit of fear that we'll be seen as narcissistic or self-centered or self-absorbed. And so there is kind of that balance, because in all things, we can run the risk of becoming completely self-centered if our day-to-day is always just about our own self-pleasure and how wonderful we are. You know, and I think we're very sensitized as a culture to never look like we're bragging or feeling too good about ourselves, but we tend to go to the extreme other end, and it almost is a badge of honor to be self-sacrificing or to be brutally persistent in beating ourselves up to be the best we can be, and to limit our foods and limit our activities and exercise ourselves. Balance, you know, it starts to become cliche, but there is this kind of delicate dance that we do between tipping over into just all self-involvement and finding that place of caring for others and still caring for ourselves. I don't have a magic number for that or what that looks like, but I know that that is probably one of the biggest struggles that we deal with as individuals.
And I think that is, you know, we talked at the very start about how self-care, and then we sort of morphed into self-nurture, changes yes. over time. And I think for me, it's also embracing self-nurture as a process. I mean, even when you were sharing, I was thinking about how my self-talk has really evolved.
Better or worse?
Much better.
Okay.
I mean, maybe messages more like, I'm good enough, or I'm doing my best, have brought me more comfort. And that's okay to say I'm good enough right now. Mm-hmm. I'm doing all that I can do right now.
And it's funny because for the first time in a long time, I had that same conversation with a colleague where I had this kind of epiphany that I thought, oh my gosh, I actually am doing the best I can do. And I really felt it, because as I said, there's always this little voice in the back of your head, but could you be doing better? Am I slacking off? But I really had this moment where I thought, I'm actually doing the best I can in my life right now. And I want to just sit in this and see what that feels like. And then to pay attention to that piece of self-nurture that I probably have not done as well with, the really just allowing myself to enjoy the things in my life that are going well, the simple things, instead of focusing all the ways that I'm maybe not measuring up, but to really focus on those things that I am already doing well or enjoy doing, and to not feel guilty about enjoying doing those things. You know, you and I, our ritual is going for a walk and getting an acai bowl, which seems so simple. But for us, it's become kind of this representative of this really nice time. And it's funny how food and pleasure are kind of interconnected, that so often we deny ourselves the pleasures of a good meal because we don't want to ruin our diet or our routine. And when we deny ourselves the pleasures of a nice meal or time with another, how many other things we deny ourselves in kind of a domino effect with that.
Yeah. And also woven for me into that is predictability. Mm-hmm. I'm noticing that part of my nurture, sometimes things are beautifully predictable, that I know what to expect on our walk in terms of we always walk the same route and we always get our bowl at the same place. And, I mean, things unfold in a way that's really comforting. And I think to recognize the value of that,
And I think that would be the thing I would want to leave you with today is that simplicity in self-nurture is probably the most pleasurable thing you can do. That if you sit quietly with your eyes closed and just breathe in and breathe out for about a minute and just allow yourself to feel your heartbeat kind of speed up as you slow down, and then it will eventually start to slow down. If you just did that once a day, that would be a beginning of great self-nurturing, because that easy breathing is our most powerful way of resetting our nervous system. And to pay attention over the holidays this next week or two to the things you do look forward to, and really embrace those things you look forward to. There'll be things that are annoying and stressful, and they're there, but instead of focusing on them, really try to set yourself forward looking at the things you care about. And as always, I appreciate you being a part of the conversation. Michelle, thank you for coming in today. You've been listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Shows are up at kcbx.org, podcast at Apple Podcasts. Thank you for supporting Public Radio KCBX. I will speak with you again soon.
Well, honey buns, it's been fun, but I gotta run.
Oh, sweet lips, stay a little while longer, won't you?
No, it's very late, baby. I really gotta go.
But look at the weather. You'll catch cold out there, and I would never forgive myself.
Oh, you.
Come on, just one more night.
No, I shouldn't.
Come on.
No, well, I really can't stay.
But baby, it's cold outside.
I've got to go away.
But baby, it's cold outside.
This evening has been
hoping that you drop
so
in.
So very nice.
I'll hold your hands. They're just like
my mother will start to worry.
Beautiful, what's your
and word? Father will be pacing the floor.
Listen to the fireplace
so
roar.
Really, I'd better scurry.
Beautiful, please don't.
Well, maybe just a half a drink.
Put some records on while I pour.
Neighbors might think drink.
No cabs to be had out there.
I wish I knew how.
Your eyes are like stars.
To break the spell.
I'll take your hat. Your hair looks swell.
I ought to say no, no, no,
mind
sir.
If I'm moving
at
closer.
Least I'm gonna say that I tried.
What's the sense of hurting my pride?
I really can't stay.
Couch, Puddin' Pop. It's a love seat.
Ooh, how you talk. Well, Barry, I simply must go.
Baby, it's cold outside.
The answer is no.
But baby, it's cold outside.
The welcome has been
how lucky that you
so
out there.
You've really been there's bound to be talk tomorrow.
Think of my lifelong sorrow.
At least there will be plenty implied.
If you caught pneumonia and died,
I really can't
get
stay.
Over that old owl.
Ah, but it's cold.
It's starting to snow.
Oh, you arranged that, didn't you?
See, now you gotta stay.
Well, I guess I won't be able to find a cab.
There are no cabs.
And the buses, oh, they never run.
They'll never run in the snow like this. Let me take your coat.
Yeah. Tomorrow is Sunday, and then I don't have to go into work.
See, isn't that better?
And who knows how long it'll keep snowing.
It'll snow for a long time, Katie.
What are you doing?